Blog Talk Radio.
You Cannot Say, a poem written by Jay Hatter and then sung by and music created by Shout Even Shy. And if it wasn't a beautiful enough poem, it turned into an amazing song, and we use it to open most of the shows around here. And this is Deborah Lee. You're listening to A Team of Voices Radio. We are a radio group, chat group, that hangs on allpoetry.com, which is one of the largest poetry sites out there. It's free to join, and if you join or are already a member, look us up under the group tab, A Team of Voices, and you can come and hang out with us. You can participate in the shows many ways. You can just have a listen from the chat room or from one of the on-demand episodes. You can click on the links to the poems that we read, and follow along from that chat wall. We post the links for each poem. You could also call to participate, and that's at 1-646-668-2837. And also, if you happen to have an email address and a headset that's got a microphone, you can also come in through your computer and not have to make the phone call. We also take recordings of the poets reading themselves, because nobody reads a poet's poem quite like that poet themselves. So there are many ways. Plus, we also have readers that we can assign for you, so whichever you prefer. And on that note, I guess we will get the show on the road. Tonight is Personal Prompt Monday. We are covering the artist Michael Humphreys. I put a bunch of different pieces of his art on the board, and the poets were asked to choose and write what they feel. And to call in, it's 1-646-668-2837. Again, that's 1-646-668-2837. And A Team of Voices Radio is sponsored by A.P. Taylor, who is one of the board members, along with myself and Jay Hatter and Sweet Pea. And we are pleased to give you shows almost every night of the week. So if you're in the chat room, you can also follow the topic boards, which are posted by the date of the show. Just click on, and if your muse is tickled, we'd love to hear from you. So, without any further delay, we will get this show on the road, and I'll start with the writer of that amazing song and my co-host, Jay Hatter. Hey, Hatter, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Glad you're here.
Thank you. Yeah, I made it.
And speaking of our sponsor, we have Mr. A.P. Taylor on the line as well from down in Australia. Hello, A.P. Welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Hi, how are you?
Glad you're here. And we have none other than Mr. Wayne Gent, who this evening, he stayed with me the whole show last time, so I wouldn't be by myself at the end. And tonight he has some get ball plans. So
just a little bit.
So I am going to get that on there, and then we'll see what 12 minutes does for Mr. A.P. Taylor there. I'm just seeing that note. Okay, so I am grabbing your link, Wayne, and I'm on my way to the chat wall with it, and we will kick off this show with your recording.
Nice, simple song.
All right. Well, it's on the board. So you guys click on it, and I'll push play, and we will see what this art inspired in Mr. Wayne Gent. So here we – do you see it, Hatter?
I'm running down the hall as we speak.
Okay. Yeah, right. And Hatter, are you down the hall, dude? I think I put the link for the 18th on the board instead of tonight. Darn it.
Yep, I'm there.
On the board. Because I think I put the wrong one. Nope, it says 12-5. All good. All right, then here comes Wayne.
This is called The Old Boat Me. By Wayne Gent. Remember the days in the ocean breeze? Row the boat, do what I please. Be so far out, to see no land. Get back late, play in the sand. We had so much fun, had life made, but you never furnished me any shade. Out at sea, I would make a wish, hope to catch the biggest fish. Every year, I would sand you down, keep you dry off the ground. And when I painted, you'd be done. And those were the days we had so much fun. As the years passed by, would sit and think, what would happen if you were to sink? I'd be alone, sitting on the shore. Wouldn't have a reason to live anymore. I sent a sand in a letter I wrote. I told you I thought you were a great boat. You never failed me, always would float. Then I laid back, took another tote. Wasn't long till I grew old, so did you. Our days at sea were over and through. And now I look at you, laying up on the bank, with all my memories I wish to thank. Ian?
Got some bluesy jazz going on in the background, and I love how you took us on this journey through the old boat, and you remembering the days when the ocean breeze rode the boat and do what I please. I was there, paused for a moment, because there's really nothing like being on the ocean, and it's just so beautiful and tranquil. And so I was lost in that ocean breeze for a moment. Every year I would sand you down and keep you dry off the ground. You know, the people look at a boat and they have no clue what it takes year after year, season after season, whether you dry dock or you put it in one of the marinas. There's still stuff that has to be done to it. And it's...
Yeah,
you can, some people save up for the boat and then they aren't prepared for all the upkeep and whatnot that goes with it, and that's what I, you know, you look there and it's got flowers growing in it now. But I love that you took it on a memory lane kind of ride here. As the years passed by, would sit and think, what would happen if you were to sink? I would be alone, sitting on the shore, wouldn't have a reason to live anymore. And there was so much sadness in there. I sat in the sand and a letter I wrote told you I thought you were a great boat. Never failed me, always would float, then laid back and took a tote. I mean, you're totally chilling. Bare feet, dipping in the sand. I mean, come on. This is really awesome, Wayne. And I really love how you took it from the perspective of the once upon a time with that boat up until now. You're just sitting there chilling together. Probably both of you could use a good sanding and a coat of paint, you know? Ha ha.
It is. Thank you, Deb. It was a great comment.
Very cool. Heather, what you think?
Yeah, the sentiment is familiar. I remember when I got my first boat, I was just as proud of it as when I got my first hot rod. Yeah, and it also reminds me of when your job was to go out and play.
Yep. That's right. Great.
Imagine.
So boats are they're a lot of work, though. Boats are a lot of work. I had a pontoon boat. They like to broke me. It was so expensive. But they're fun.
Yeah. And then add not this particular boat, unless you put a little motor on the back instead of rowing, but... Then you got to tack on the fuel because, you know, that's outrageous too. It's an amazing money pit, but it's a money pit. But awesome.
Absolutely.
AP, what you think?
Yeah, it's a great image, isn't it? It's really quite beautiful sitting on the sand, and it was nice to sort of hear the story of it. And there was, I'm going to use the word wistful. There was a wistfulness to the poem. There was a sort of remembering back to what was and how beautiful that was. And that was played very well with the guitar. Wayne, very nice.
Thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate that. Great comment.
Awesome comment all the way around. And Wayne, are you staying a little while or did the game start?
Yeah, I'm going to stay another 15 minutes. The game just didn't really start, so I'm going to stay another 15 minutes.
Okay, cool. So we can get you in on two more poems. So how about we get you in on Mr. A.P. Taylor's poem, because I happen to have it on good authority that he wrote it in like 12 minutes, so I can't wait to see what kind of show it off he's doing next.
You ready? This is Rocks Below a Quatern, and it goes a little bit like this. Tumbling waters, they spray rocks below as they shimmy past a crestfallen shed. Flash in a burbling show, married to the forest, this stream is wed. The small incline causes the rocks to pool. Tumbling waters, they spray rocks below. Their essence is pure and mists are cool, hovering around with a gossamer glow. Across stones slow, they tumble as flow, glistening among grass and the trees. Tumbling waters, they spray rocks below. Here and there, fishes do as they please. Until the stream again gathers in speed, while around those trees plentifully grow, sweeping the wide plains and past reeds. Tumbling waters, they spray rocks below. End poem.
12 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, like I said, showing off again. It's a form, nonetheless. Not an evil one, I must say, but a form, nonetheless. And it's got the perfect rhyme and flow. It's got visuals throughout that take you into the scene. You could almost hear the sound of the water and the splashing spray hitting the rocks. And I think my favorite one is the second to the last. Across stones flow, they tumble as flow, glistening amongst grass and the trees. Tumbling waters, they spray rocks below. Here and there, fishes do as they please. And it's just like you could almost even see the fish under the face looking for something to eat. I mean, really tranquil, vivid picture that you've painted with your words to go with the art. Great job. Show up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hatter?
Okay, the one line stays constant from first to second to third to fourth.
That's correct.
No,
yes,
and no other.
Yes.
Hey, what's
yes.
It
no,
called?
No other. It's a quatern, Hatter. A 4x4 with the rotating line starting at the top and going to the fourth. Yeah.
Cool.
I use the quatern quite a bit. It's a bit fiddly, and so of course it's French, because you know most fiddly forms are French, a reasonably new form, the quatern. It's only been around for 40-50 years.
It's sort of cool to, if you were to have words with two meanings in each line, you could it would be a subject than a predicate.
Yes, you could do some really fun things with it, Hatter. And
yeah.
Sometimes with the quatern, they say that it's 8 syllables per line. This isn't. This doesn't have 8 syllables. But then, that's sort of a optional feature.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. And Wayne, what did you think?
I said only 4 stanzas, and this reads like a novel. You said so much poetically in those few lines, more than an encyclopedia can teach somebody. Great balance, wonderful flow. You had a great storyline. I like the style. That's a fun style to write with, but it's tricky. But it's fun, but it's tricky. You did a great job with it. I enjoyed the poem. Good job.
No, thanks, Juan. Cheers.
Awesome. And, I have put Titus's link on the board. I think I had said last week,
yep.
But July and December are slow months on the radio, so I'm hoping that none of the hosts and hostesses get discouraged because just a little lull.
Happens every year.
No
board advertising.
Right, and I do notice that, the hits on the on-demand episodes are still staying at the same steady pace. So when they can't dial in, they're listening there, and just thankful that everyone listens, and thank you all for that. And the next poem on the board is by Titus. I was hoping to get this one in before you and Wayne had to go.
Yep.
So if you click on that, I will... Push his recording.
Cool.
See it, everyone?
Yep.
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 All right. Here is Titus's poem.
"'Twas where the bogeyman lay. Observations on my bedroom curtain. A wary young boy who had half-raised suspicion on the tree outside. For certain, tall tales are said to evolve unfazed. Languishing light under cover, too afraid the extent to which all fears do heighten. The half-hidden truth, the fear had strayed somewhat carelessly to have me frightened. A lowly root, I thought. The utmost speed dwelled upon seeing to believe that under my bed my knowing not would supersede stretching an imaginative blunder. A tiny boy's mishap down Larch Tree Way, the fear of whose then naughtiness it was not mine, but what the bogeyman would say as I lay that shadowy figure's lost course."
You know, there was a, his voice matched the sentiment in that last sentence there. I would show a shadowy, deep, lost cause. There was a sadness or sense of loss in his voice as he was reading, and observations on my bedroom curtain, and then you go to the weary young boy, which says it's like a memory of a tree outside the window, languishing light under cover, too afraid to extend to which all fears do heighten. The things are so different at night, especially when you're a kid. You know, you look out the window, and during the day, you might see the squirrels running up that tree and jumping branch to branch and having a good time, but then the shadows of night happen, and everything's different. Every sound is different, and you do. You start to think, you know, well, I say it differently, but the boogeyman is after you, and once you get it into your mind can play tricks on you. A lowly root, I thought, the utmost speed dwelled upon seeing to believe that under my bed my knowing not would supersede stretching an imaginative plunder. And that's sort of what I was just trying to get at. Your imagination just can take you to some pretty freaky places, to where, yeah, you want to just hide your own naivety, get you to think that ducking under those covers will keep you safe, and then you go to, I would show a shadowy, deep, lost cause. I think that this is powerful, and I can't help but think that he had a similar tree outside his window. But I am sure when he hears this, he'll give me that answer. Great share, Titus. I appreciate it. And I love that first line, observations on my bedroom curtain. And imagine the shadow puppets that came through that curtain. Awesome. AP, what you think?
Well, see, I was just really interested in how he read the poem, Deb, because there was a use of stressed and unstressed words. So in, for example, the second and fourth lines, typically the last word was unstressed. So it was like in the first stanza it was half raised, unraised. And it sort of faded away at the end of the lines, and it gave it this sort of feel, a little bit eerie, but a little bit also as if it was contemplative. He was still thinking about it, and it was really interesting because most people stress the final word of a sentence, and Tony didn't hear, and I'm sure it was deliberate to give that a very different feel in the read. And I'm trying to make sense of how he did that, and and I was desperately trying to do it in case you asked me first. But it was a really, really clever read, and it was a beautiful technical piece of poetry.
Great comment. Yeah, yeah. No, you could definitely hear it in his voice as he read this one. It was there. The underlying creepy, scary hauntingness of it. Very cool. And are you headed out?
I am, Deb, unfortunately. I'm off to make a few calls and do a few things because it's 2:30 in the afternoon here. But thanks again for the images. They were terrific. And we will no doubt talk very soon.
All right. And thank you for calling. Appreciate
good night,
it.
AP, AP.
Okay. Thanks, Deb. Okay. Talk soon.
All right.
And Wayne, what'd you think?
Well, I said, this is wonderful. I heard it the other day on the SoundCloud and left funny message. I think it has a great storyline. It's told in a magical way. I love it. By the way, he has several poems that he wrote that are wonderful on SoundCloud. He's writing really nicely now. He's got more energy. It's more energy and more powerful than it usually is. And it seems like, you know, it's kind of forceful. I like it. I like it a lot. He did a great job.
Awesome comment, Wayne. And Hatter, will you comment for Titus and then read your poem for us?
Okay. Yeah, I noticed the same thing AP did. On that one line, it doesn't end. It wasn't stressed because it's not the end. He read it as a wary young boy who had half-raised suspicion. He ran right into the next line. It would have been read different if somebody else had read it. But I did notice that the same thing AP did. I'd like to know also the intent. It's very good. Titus crosses the place up. I mean, now, did anybody, either one of you, have the boogeyman under your bed? Where was he, in the closet? Or?
No, I think he was scared of me. I always had a brother. Me and my brother said, we weren't scared of nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't under the bed. In my childhood either, maybe because I was top bunk of a bunk bed. My little brother was under my bed.
Yeah, he got eight first.
Well done.
Fabulous. Now show us what you got.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm reading. Spaced out. Okie dokie. We'll see how this goes. I didn't do a final edit. A basket full of lilacs. I was at the Lilac Festival in Rochester, New York one year. So lilacs, the whole town smelled wonderful. It goes like this. A basket full of lilacs. A barrel full of mums digging wells behind me to face the rising sun. Morning dew to drink from lighting all the rows. Morning dew to drink from lighting all the rows. Writing rhyme to pass the time, weeding out the prose. Easy breeze to color up the falling of the leaves. Tell me where the love me dews is hiding in the trees. I walk into a past nightmare, not knowing where to run. Digging wells behind me to face the rising sun. Pocket full of lilacs.
Wow, Hatter. You know, there's something about, where is it? Digging wells behind me to face the rising sun. There, you use wells to define emotion often when you get into this mind space. And I find that fascinating, like wishing wells and digging wells. And it's just, but it's like this big memory, a basket full of lilacs, a barrel full of mums, digging wells behind me to face the rising sun. I mean, four couplets, but they're gorgeous. And it's got the Hatter rhyme, weeding out the prose. I thought that was an excellent metaphor. I walk into a past nightmare, not knowing where to run, digging wells behind me to face the rising sun. I just, like I said, you use wells to define your emotion, and you do it really well, tying them into sadness or a memory from the past, like maybe that, you know, the flowers, the scent of the flower might have triggered a memory. But yeah, I know I used one line from one of your poems, something stars and wishing wells. I'll have to find it. I think that poem's in your book too. But you have this way of, like I said, using a well. Very impressive. Great breath.
And you catch it every time. Thank you.
It's profound to me. I don't know why it hits with emotion, because you write it with emotion. Anyway, great brevity. Wayne, what do you think?
Thank you.
I said, wonderful couplets. The way you use the weather and the time of day is perfect in this poem. Great rhyme, and you went from dew to nighttime to rising sun. All real smooth, and you put four couplets. That's pretty remarkable. And it sounds perfect with a great rhyme. You did good on this poem. I like it a whole lot. Like magical.
Thank you, Wayne.
Great comment, Wayne. And I know you have to. Are you having company for your game? Right. Mr. Wayne Gent? Oh, he's already gone. That's why he's not answering. They must be at the door. Talk about excellent timing. Okay, so on that note, let me shoot over here. Okay, I did that. And I am going to, now she said 11, so I'm going to save angels towards the end this time. And grab a different one instead, because usually I'm trying to read her so that she can go back and do something work-related. And I think something work-related is happening, and she needs to come at 11, so let's come over here, and I will grab, who else needs to be read? I'm going to grab Stephen's poem and bring that to the board in case he's listening in bed so that he can go to sleep. So, Hatter, tell me when you see Stephen's.
I see Stephen's.
All right, then here comes his voice, Stephen 76.
Thankful by Stephen 76. As the cold wind slips through the dilapidated walls, he sits alone at the table and remembers. Remembering when, how on this day, the scent of a roasting turkey would fill every room in this cracked shell of a house. There he sits and stares at the fading wood grain and wonders, what does he have to be thankful for? That's when it comes to him. In a flood, he recalls that he is so grateful for when this home was warm, when it held love. Thankful for when cats and dogs once played at his feet and a child danced in front of the now smashed television. But he was most thankful for when he would look across the table to see his wife smiling back at him. He smiles at these memories, looks across the table at her empty chair, then down at the growing puddle of tears on an empty tabletop. End poem.
Wow. The, of course, the title, Thankful, sets the tone. As the cold wind slips through the dilapidated walls, he sits alone at the table and remembers. And just that couplet takes you to countless people who do. And you can see that they're probably a bit older and not able to keep the place up, and they're sitting alone remembering how on this day the scent of a roasted turkey would fill every room in the cracked shell of a house. And you could almost smell the food. And there's emotion all through it. There he sits and stares at the fading wood grain. wondering what he has to be thankful for, and that's when it comes to him in a flood of recalls that he's so grateful for. And I love that concept. When he was feeling his lowest and you know, wondering, you know, thankful for what, that he was flooded with all the stuff he's always been grateful for. And those memories are something, they're a priceless treasure that a lot of people eventually lose. I've seen what Alzheimer's does to people or dementia. So those memories are the treasures. He smiles at those memories, and he looks across the table and down at the puddle of tears. But now you know, by the time you get down to that empty table with the tears, you know that the puddle is mixed with sad tears, yes, but it's also mixed with the beautiful memories of days gone by. This is a pretty potent poem. About kicked my butt. Great share, Stephen. What do you think, Hatter?
Yeah, very solemn. I used to draw specifically barns, old barns and bridges. And when I was up on the farms, every once in a while you'd run across a new piece of property that you would have to run the cattle through or something. But there would always be a building of some sort, either a foundation to a home or the barns were usually what stayed up the longest. And the memories of what happened, any time that I would draw it or try to investigate or walk around it, I always wondered what it was like in its busiest day. Did the road come up to it then, or the highway push it back to it? Now it's got a long driveway. There are certain elements of a barn that you could tell by the structure of what it was used for. I learned that through the years of drawing them, but old barns to me were just fascinating. I'd love to walk through them and try to pick up any kind of vibes from them. And there are a lot of different kinds. This is really, really well done. Nice job.
Great comment, Hatter. Yeah, I agree. I'm always amazed at the way we are able to touch each other with our words, you know, and whether it be through a laugh or the sentiment that poet is bleeding in their ink, and so far tonight, there's been a lot of emotion portrayed. So I love when that happens. Okay, let me see where we're at here. All right, let me grab this one. Lawrence 67 sent it in for us, and I will read that for him. And okay, there's that. And then we have Bill and Gerald's recordings and Angel and Sweet's poems. So it's probably going to be an hour show, which is just fine because Hatter sounds exhausted anyway. So, tell me, do you see the poem? It's called Order Up.
Yep, it is. I did it. I got it.
Okay. This is Order Up by Lawrence 67. And here we go. The Adventures of Niall and Fat Cat and his homie Alfie. Uh-oh, my name's in here. Hello there, Miss Deborah Lee. Would you like to place an order, please? Let me see now. I want a number 2, please. You can't have a number 2. That's Wayne Gents. But I want a number 2. You can't have a number 2. Give me a number 2, Wayne Gent. won't mind because he's off on an old boat. He'll never know. That's funny. Sorry about that, Miss Deborah Lee, but kid, you know what you are going to do? I ain't no kid. Watch me cuss. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Hey, what happened to my cuss words? This is PG. You can't cuss here. You can't? Then let me have a Happy Meal with nuggets and fries, extra catnip, and a kitty toy. Order up. And that was too cute. I was trying not to laugh, but I couldn't help myself. I want Wayne's meal. I want it now. That's really cute. I like his adventures of Nigel and the fat cat and Homie. He's got a library. He could probably fill a book with these. These are really, really cool. And it was fun to read. Wow. Thank you, Lawrence. I appreciate the giggle. Hatter, what you think?
Yeah, very clever. Can't have the dad as number two. Blame it on Wayne. I assume that some situation like this arose. What happened to the? I think the favorite was what happened to my cuss words.
Yeah, bleep, bleep, bleep. No, I think I couldn't hold in my giggle there. And I mean, he's right. We are a PG group, and you can't cuss here. Well, the minor little ones maybe, but I have a feeling that they weren't minor there. Bleep, bleep. That was just really, really clever.
It was.
All right. It's just you and me, Heather. I'm going to grab one of the recordings. And I'm going to grab Phil's and bring it over to the chat wall. Here it is. Okay. Tell me when you see it, and I'll push play.
I see it.
All right. And here we go.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called The Farmhouse on Molly Road. The city left far behind for a two-week break. The July sky filled with the shrill orders of a drake. Two young boys excited to see the farm once again. The fields are emerald with the Irish summer rain. Away from school, playing in a barn full of hay, captures the poet's smile as he thinks on that day. Riding the tractor with Uncle Pat shouting, "Oi, boy!" while the farmhouse is once more filled with toys. Picking blackberries along the Molly Road hedgerows, the lowering of the cattle mixed with the cries of the crows. Two dirty-faced boys go back to see Grandma White. Parents laugh at the dark crimson faces. What a sight! Faces watch a sow wallow in the mud with curiosity, but couldn't quite figure it out with all pure honesty. So decided to play football in the sloping field, the one opposite the house with the rustic reel. Days gone, but not forgotten of the time at Molly Road. Grandma and uncle long gone, the farmhouse sold, where two boys from Liverpool played together happily, which now seems like a far-off dream. Or fantasy. And poem.
Well, some nice rhyme in here. Let me see. I like so many parts of it. The descriptions that take us on the journey with them, you could picture the sky. And in the second stanza there, away from school, playing in the barn full of hay, captures the poet's smile as he thinks of that day. Riding the tractor with Uncle Pat shouting, "Oh boy," while the farmhouse is once more filled with toys. It's just, there was another sentimental, right, like the feeling of stuff he was remembering about hanging out at that farm, picking blueberries, blackberries, sorry, but I got lost in those blackberries because I love blackberries, and I'm just imagining them warmed by the sun, juicy, and oh man, and the, where was it, faces with a swallow in the mud with curiosity, but he couldn't quite figure it with all pure honesty, so he decided to play football in the sloping field, the one opposite the house with the rustic wheel. And even that, you could picture, like, the wheel would more than likely be in a stream, maybe even moving if the water was active that day.
What picture did he have? What picture did he have?
Yeah, I was trying to beat you to ask, and I'm headed over there. Okay, I don't – so maybe not the water wheel, but still, I'm putting it up. I mean, I'm wondering or imagining that it's that the tractor that's in this art that would have had him thinking of his uncle and taking that ride. It just felt very nostalgic. So sometimes I can picture that person, like, in it. And here comes the picture right now. And it's just, it's a beautiful piece of art, and it's a very sentimental rite to go with it. I think he did a beautiful job, and apparently so did a couple of judges, because he's been in two contests, and he got an award on both. So it is a multi-award-winning poem. Molly Road, I wonder if that's a real place. I mean, you know, if you get to the end of a poem and it leaves you wondering stuff like that, whether it's real or whether he was the child or something, somebody you know that the poet did it, their job and touched the readers. What do you think, Hatter?
Yeah, this was definitely a memory out of my head. There's five brothers in my family, and when four of us would go up to my aunt's, the first thing we'd do is race to this cabinet, which had old cowboy boots that were going to be tossed or used for the leather used for something else. I don't know why they kept it, but we would grab them and put them on and wear them the whole time we were there. And they were too big for us, but we would wear them the whole time we were on the damn farm. It was just hilarious. But, yeah, the excitement of showing up at my aunt's ranch was always great memories. So much to do. So much to see.
And never enough time, right?
Yeah. Well, and then wherever you landed, that's where you slept. Could be anywhere.
And you see how his poem just took you on a journey?
It did. You know, they had a bell from a locomotive on the back corner of the farmhouse, and they would ring it, and it was very loud, and that meant anywhere on that 60 acres you could hear it, that meant time to come in for some reason. If you heard it, it was an emergency or it was time to go.
Great memory.
Okay.
And I must also say that this poem was also a front page pick, so it's easy to see why. I'm sure that the picker was touched by the sentiment as well. Congratulations on the awards and the pick, Phil. Thank you for sending this in. You did a great job. So let me see. Gerald's is on the board. And I'm just checking the studio real quick and not sure whether the suite planned on calling or not. So keep it going. Hatter, tell me when you're on Gerald's, please.
Okay, running down the hall now. Hold on. I see it.
Okay. Then I'll push play. Here it comes.
Decision. Written and read by Gerald Green. He gazed at the yellow pills in his thick, open left hand, pausing all thought in this time of emptiness. He heard sparrows and an occasional crow in the early morning air, but felt nothing as he sat in his worn-out chair, on the front porch. Grown children and grandchildren had left the day before, and now that she was buried, he was alone. A once coveted condition. His eyes shifted to the old, unpainted carriage house, his only source of happiness in the past decade. A place of no demands or expectations since retirement. He found comfort in seeing his grandfather's wagon still standing where he left it. As his eyes came back to his open hand, he considered, living in peace would be a hard life. End poem.
Decision. Another one-word title, but really powerful. He gazed at the yellow pills in his thick, open left hand, pausing all thought in this time of emptiness. And I sort of held my breath for a moment there. He heard the occasional crow or sparrow. Grown children and grandchildren had left the day before, and now she was buried. He was alone. A once coveted condition. That extra line of a once coveted condition is like an eye-opener, kind of a careful what you wish for kind of line. Because, you know, oh, why can't I get some peace and quiet? Oh, now you don't have anything else type of. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of words here, but the depressing sorrow that overwhelms you when you have a loss, and then at the end of that particular day when everybody's gone and you're stuck with the silence, and it can
be
really,
melt the cow.
It can be so overwhelming, you know, and that first stanza, it keeps pulling me back, pausing all thought in this time of emptiness. He found comfort in seeing his grandfather's wagon still standing where he left it. As his eyes came back to his open hand, he considered, living in peace would be a hard life. And that, living in peace would be a hard life. I'm, you know, you're left there with the vision of, you know, a hand with those pills in it. And the answer of living in peace would be a hard life can still go both ways, you know. Wow. Kind of left wondering what they did, huh?
Yeah.
Powerful. What do you think, Hatter?
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's so much unsaid. Now that she was buried, that came, you know, about halfway through it, but it was perfectly spread. It just sort of dropped the bottom out of the piece. Grandchildren had left before, now that she was buried. Yeah, that must have been hard. I remember when my uncle died, my aunt ran the farm by herself. And it was hard to see sometimes, because I knew what was entailed and what she had to get rid of, because she couldn't do it. But very good. I like the picture too.
Yeah, I mean it fits the picture perfectly. It's just that the feelings are overwhelming here, and that sense of, oh my goodness, what at the end kicks your butt.
Yeah, see the picture? It looks like a breezeway in between, right in the middle of that. A lot of the barns have that. I don't know if that's quite what that is, because that looks like a porch. A lot of barns had drive-throughs, you know, where you could drive through the barn, unloading and to load things. So that's very nice.
Yeah. Power in his pen.
Yeah. He's having that.
Yeah. All right. Let me see here. Go back over to this board. And okay, so we have Heavenly Angel and we have Sweet Pea. So let me grab Angels and we'll see if Sweet calls, and then if not, I will read for my beautiful Sweet, and it'll be the last poem of the night. So, more side to hear's Angels. Okay. On my way to the chat wall, there it be. So how to tell me when you see it, please?
Got it. I see it right there in front of me.
Okay.
Stunning.
And wow. Yeah, I was just going to say another one-word title. And every one of those one-word titles have been really powerful. Jeez. Okay. And as usual, this is a multi-award-winning poem by Heavenly Angel, and it is called Stunning. And here we go. As we celebrate the last abundant harvest, clouds are tinted in shades of cinnamon and clove sunset swept along breezy kiss. Wondrous sights and smells inhaled by senses, allspice pumpkin, blankets of cherry red, pear, and russet brown leaves. Autumn displays her stunning beauty. End poem. And you know, for those who can't see the picture, there's an old wine barrel that's got plants growing out of it and a few other plants and stuff, and there's a basket with a beautiful, what you would imagine to be a family heirloom. The quilt.
It's a laundry basket.
Yeah, and the quilt there.
I see it now. I see it now. Sure. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, the wine barrel. Yeah. Okay, I was going to say, huh? Yeah, there's a couple planters. There's the wine barrel, and then there's the basket with the quilt. And then there's a couple of pumpkins. And it's a very simplistic piece of art, but it does pull out the sentiment, especially with that quilt in there.
It's all that quilt, yeah.
Yeah, and the colors, the scents, it was a little treat for the senses there. And before you comment, Hatter, let me pick up this 303, because I know what state that is.
It's me.
Hello, hello.
Hi, darling.
Hello.
Hey.
You know, you have perfect timing, my dear. Perfecto mundo. I'm going to get Hatter to comment on Angel's poem, and then it's your turn, because you're the last poem.
How awesome.
Right?
I knew I was
going to
get really close.
Well, only because tonight's show's an hour, but, I mean, still, I had just got done saying that if you didn't show up, I would read for my beautiful Sweet, and then she appeared. So, anyway, Hatter, what you think of Angel's poem?
A Christmas miracle. Yeah, you could actually smell the words. I could. The quilts on a farm are old school. They're handmade from previous generations. fall has got to be the best time. All the vegetables and fruits are finished. We harvested and everything starts turning green again. Oh, it's beautiful. Very nostalgic. Wow.
Great comment. And Sweet Pea, I'm grabbing your link right now. And
I loved, by the way, Heavenly Angel's poem. I thought it was gorgeous.
Oh, please go ahead. I wasn't sure. I didn't think you were here. Please go ahead and comment.
Yeah, I love her imagery and her stylized, you know, way of telling a story and describing things. She just always, always seems to bring it every single time. It was just gorgeous. It just lulls you into that sense of fall and cuddles you into it, because, you know, how fall just has that tendency to kind of either be warm and breezy or icy and cold, and it just has that perfect blend in there. Because I want to wrap up in that. So.
Yeah, right? Great comment.
Yeah.
And Hatter, do you see Sweet's poem?
Yes, sir. I sure do.
What? What do you mean, yes, sir?
I know, that's it. I don't know what happened there.
This is called Falling Leaves. How quickly green retreats as the kiss of summer fades, leaving leaves of color. Bitter winds whisk a morning's frostbite, afternoon delights in warm amber rays. Green summer stalks bend to shorter days. Fall shakes awake from slumber. Humanity's eyes glaze, absorbed in nature's colors. Sunset orange, aspen gold, reds and fire shades. Thoughts drift away to smells of bonfires in old high school days. Trees are weeping, fall color fades. Leaves decay, falling into soil graves as winter settles. End poem.
Gorgeousness. I love the colors that you pulled off through that. How quickly green retreats. I love the way you phrased that. It retreats like it didn't have a choice in the matter, or like it had a choice in the matter. It retreated. It wasn't chased out by that. Because even I have a tendency to go with the chased out or replaced by, but I really liked that the green was just like, no, I'm going to go take a nap now, and it retreats. So I thought that was really clever. And like I said, the use of the colors, especially in the second to the last stanza with the sunset orange and aspen gold, I'm sure referring to the beautiful leaves on an aspen tree, reds and the fire shades through thoughts stripped away to the smells of bonfires and old high school days. And, yeah, there was nothing quite like a bonfire when you're high school age, and there's almost always somebody playing guitar, and there's some singing going on, and we'll leave that there. But then the trees are weeping, color fades and leave decay, falling into soil graves as winter settles in to stay. And it's just like you just took us right through the three of the seasons. You took us out of the summer into the fall and then ended us with winter with nothing to look forward to but the summer. I mean, it's just, it's a beautiful brevity, my sweet. And I'm so glad you made it. Hatter, what you think?
Did you guys get the little tornadoes in the fall? They're like dirt, like dust devils, but they pick up leaves and dance around.
Yeah, and they hit them around across the neighborhood. Yes.
Yeah, that's really reminding me of the colors and the set that you sort of described in front of us the smells of bonfires to in all high school days, the days before everybody allergic to peanuts.
Days before everybody was allergic to peanuts. I love your comments sometimes.
And I was going to say the days before when people used to carry cash around, those little tiny tornadoes would happen in the same spot repeatedly over the years. And it used to be that you knew where those little tornadoes happened. You could always find some cash there because the wind always seemed to take it up to one particular fence line or the corner of one grocery store or whatever the case may be.
Exactly.
And it would pick up the cash and throw it there. Now we all have plastic, so there ain't much cash to find. But anyway, yeah, it was a great brevity.
me and my brothers, when we would see one of those start, automatic run to it, just run into it until the day that we found one that kept growing and growing. Sort of ran away from that one.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
Sweet, do you know what's happening on Thursday?
I do. It's Mad Animal Pictures, and I hope you guys find one and write a great poem to them. I mean, how depressed is that owl? How mad is that bird?
The owl's who I'm writing to. I'm so glad you said that. I got to finish it. I was almost done. Sorry, go ahead.
There's so many people that love that owl or that bird. Let me tell you, that owl has got people giggling, and he's so sad.
Which one are you talking about?
You got an Eeyore look going on, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, my God. He's so sad. And then I've got the people that love the bird. And, you know, those are just really great pictures. So I'm excited for Thursday night.
As am I. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Seven.
All right. I am going to wiggle out of my car now, so if you hear some noise, I apologize.
I'm in your
we
car.
We might hear some wiggle noises. That's her disclaimer. Watch out for wiggle noises.
Yes. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle.
I'm glad you made it, my sweet, and you have
Thank
a great
you.
Night.
All right, guys. I will chit-chat with you later.
All right.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, Hatter, so we got, I think it was 11 or 12 poems in an hour and a couple of minutes. So we did great.
Yes, we did.
And you lasted the whole show because I was afraid your medicine might kick your butt and you'd be falling asleep on me.
Yeah, I haven't had any yet today.
Aha. Well, that would explain it. Every time I think of somebody falling asleep, I won't embarrass her, but it makes me think of one of our past hostesses who went into such a deep sleep. We caught her snoring on the recording.
We covered it. Yeah.
Yep. And like I said, I would never say the name, not unless they were sitting here and could giggle with us. But anyway, all right, so on that note, we finished with Michael Humphreys. I thought he was a really cool artist. And I'm not positive what's happening on Tuesday night, so I will go directly to Wednesday, which is Sky Darkholm, and she's doing her Lego Star Wars Christmas special, and she's got a trailer or a bunch of different trailers and clips and stuff that you can pick from and have a little bit of Christmas fun there. And then Sweet just told us about Thursday, and on Friday night we have the Liquid Damage Lounge with Linda and Open Poetry, and that is at 10 o'clock on Friday. And then on Saturday night we will do the Open Poetry show that we had to postpone last week, and then the following Saturday we will have a prompt that Hatter will choose for us. I think it's his turn. And on that note, I think we will, yeah, it's the 16th, and that's your turn to pick a prompt, Hatter. So you have a little while to think about that. But on that note, I want to thank all the amazing poets who sent in poems for tonight. Angel and Phil and Stephen and Titus and Wayne and Gerald and Lawrence and my sweet and my Hatter and my AP, the wonderful board members. I appreciate you all very much. The shows are what they are because of all of you. And keep an eye on the board just in case there's a show for tomorrow. Otherwise, I'll see you guys Wednesday at Skies. And I think we will go out with a song. And I'm looking for something to play.
What's our choices?
I think I'm just... Huh?
Okay. I say, what's our choices?
Oh, I was going to say, I'm in sort of... The poems put me in a bluesy-ish mood, and I don't know if everyone's familiar with Michael Grimm. He was a contestant on, like...
America's Got Talent.
Yeah,
Idol, next Idol.
I think, no, it might be, you might be right, it might be America's Got Talent. But he did a few cover songs, and they absolutely have blown me away. And like, this cover song is actually one of my favorite songs. So I think I will go with this one. And again, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Hatter. And
thanks
for calling, Wayne. I hope the game's amazing. And we will all talk soon. Michael Grimm,
hey,
everyone.
Hey, Deb.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Did you see my totals over the weekend?
I did, yeah. Kicking butt. It was over 200 when I saw it.
Ridiculous. All right.
I know, right? All right. Michael Grimm.
Thanks.
These arms are mine. Love and respect, everyone. And thank you.
These arms are mine. They are lonely. Lonely. And feeling blue. These arms of mine, they are wanting. Oh, they're wanting to hold you. And if you just let them hold on for you. Oh, how grateful I will be. These arms of mine, they are yearning for love.
Night, everyone. Thanks, Hatter.
Good night.